I'm Marty Moscow, and welcome back to Radio Times. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force is made up of a group of health experts who offer guidance on prevention and primary care. Their new guidelines about mammography and breast cancer screening have created confusion and concern. They recommend that most women wait until they're 50 before they have a mammogram and then have them every other year. They question the usefulness of breast self-exams and said there should be more research to determine whether women over 75 should get mammograms. They said the current practices lead to too many false positives, too many tests, and unnecessary procedures. The American Cancer Society, the American College of Radiology, the Society of Breast Imaging, among others, have spoken out against the task force recommendations. Kathleen Sebelius, the head of Health and Human Services, told women yesterday to essentially ignore the new guidelines, talk to their doctors, and she called for more research on breast cancer. Well, we're going to wade into this controversy and confusion. We've got two guests, both of whom join us by telephone. Dr. Marisa Weiss is a breast cancer oncologist, founder of breastcancer.org, author of Living Beyond Breast Cancer and Taking Care of Your Girls, a breast health guide for girls, tweens, and in-betweens. And Marisa Weiss, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
And Dr. Jeffrey Tice is an assistant professor of medicine at the University of California in San Francisco. He's an internist. His research focuses on women's health and breast cancer risk assessment and prevention. And Jeffrey Tice, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you for having me.
And Jeff, if I could begin with you, and then Marisa, I want to hear from you. And this is sort of a broad question, and I do want to get into the specifics. But essentially, what do you suggest women do? Jeffrey?
Well, I'm going to step back, hopefully. This makes sense. I think mammography is, as some people have written, one of medicine's close calls. And the balance between harms and benefits is really delicate. And we're talking about healthy women and irradiating their breasts to try and find something early. What age do we start? Do we start at age 10? Clearly not. Do we continue at age 100? Almost certainly not. So the question is, you know, where does the balance of benefits and harms, when does it tip in a woman's favor? And I think, you know, it's really all about risk assessment. And overall, the simple risk assessment tool is age, because that's the strongest predictor of breast cancer in women. And for the general population, 50 is good. That's where the task force thought that the balance tipped in favor of mammography for most women. For some women, we would recommend doing it earlier. Women with family history, certainly women who have been found to have one of the genes that puts them at very high risk for breast cancer, the BRCA1 or BRCA2 genes. And I don't think the task force disagrees with that. So I really liked your introduction, because you didn't say definitively they've said women shouldn't do mammography until 50. They should say, for the average woman, 50 is the right time to start. Before that, it needs to be individualized, in part based on risk and in part based on the values of an individual woman, how she feels about screening.
And just to recap, I mean, essentially what you're saying is that follow the task force guidelines as they were announced earlier this week.
Yes, and if you read the guidelines, they do say, that we need to individualize for women younger than 50.
Well, let me turn to you, Marisa Weiss, and I know you're one of the critics. What is your problem with these with the guidelines, and perhaps even the research that went into the guidelines?
Well, breastcancer.org is in strong opposition to these guidelines, and you know, I've been a practicing physician in breast oncology, and I know that for every decision we make, if it's screening or treatment, we're always going to weigh the benefits against the side effects. And in this analysis, what they did was they substantially underestimated the benefits, and they overestimated the harms. And so when they compare benefits to side effects, it looked like it was too close to call for women who are between 40 and 49, when in fact, if you actually looked at realistic benefits and realistic harms, then the therapy, then the weighing of pros and cons would tip greatly in the favor of getting a mammogram annually starting at age 40. And let me tell you where I'm coming from on this.
Yeah,
so
please.
In terms of the benefits, the 15% decrease in the risk of dying of breast cancer for women between 40 and 49 was a highly conservative estimate. And in fact, when you look at studies that where women are actually getting mammograms annually starting at age 40 to 40 to 49. And the, probably the best place to look at that is data from Sweden and the Netherlands, where their whole population is getting mammograms in at that interval over time. Then you see about a 40% reduction in the chance of dying of breast cancer, the most common cancer to affect women in that age group. And then when they looked at the harms caused, included in the harms were false positives, and that could be coming back for extra views, coming back for an ultrasound. It could be a biopsy. But biopsies today are used usually done usually with a core, not an open biopsy. And also, they looked at the harm of being radiated. And I've seen the papers quoted looking at papers equating radiation given to young people, young women, with fluoroscopy for tuberculosis, and equating that to the biological effect of giving a mammogram and the radiation dose there, when in fact, there's no evidence that cancer is caused at the lower doses typical of breast imaging. And even when you look at the New York HIP study from the late 60s, it used at least 10 times, that's 1,000% of the radiation given with a mammogram that we use today, there was no increase in cancer incidence, even 30 years after screening. And so that's why there's been this outrage, because breast cancer is the most common cancer to affect women. We have a test, thank goodness, that can save lives, including young women's lives, and that this paper analysis is not simply an objective computer with no assumptions. In fact, it assumed the least benefits and the worst, quote-unquote, harm.
Well, let me just jump in here, Marisa, and I'm sure, Jeff, you want to add something as well, but are you saying that there are no risks associated with breast cancer, with mammography?
No, I'm not saying that. Mammography is an imperfect test. It overperforms in some people, meaning that it will find things that were never going to be life-threatening that get full treatment along with the side effects. And it also underperforms in the sense that there are some cancers that escape detection. But most of the time, it performs well. But with all this confusion, its chance to perform and save lives is going to decrease. The confusion that's out there is going to deter people from coming to get their mammogram. And I believe that we continue to work with what we know can save lives. We continue to improve it. But we don't abandon the test that we know will save lives. This is, again, the most common cancer to affect women. And the study didn't stop there. Of course, it went on to say that women should basically stop examining themselves and doctors should stop teaching women how to examine
themselves.
And I do
want to get to that.
That hasn't shown a survival benefit. When, in fact, the three tools that we have, mammography, breast self-exam, a doctor's examination, the three together, correlated together, give us our best chance, each woman her best chance of early detection when cancer can be found at a time when her survival can be impacted.
Well, let me go back to you, Jeff Tyson, just picking up on several things that Marisa Weiss just said, because the most common cause of death, as I understand it, for women ages 35 to 50 is breast cancer. Is that correct?
That's correct. About 1 in 10 deaths in women in that age range is due to breast cancer, and that's the leading cause.
And that's the leading cause. And yet this report says that women, and I realize that they're high-risk women, but nonetheless, that women don't need to have mammography between the ages of 40 and 50, and they shouldn't start that until the age of 50. How do you correlate, or how do you if this is the most common cause of death for women in this age group, wouldn't you want to have mammography?
Well, I mean, I think we will, and certainly we'll use it for women who find lumps and for women at higher risk. I think most physicians will continue to recommend mammography, but it's a small benefit. So, I mean, I let's put some numbers on it. For 1,000 women who are age 40 who get annual mammography, the standard right now, they'll have 10,000 mammograms, about 1,000 false positives, about 100 biopsies, to find 14 breast cancers, and all of that will prevent, granted using the relatively conservative estimate, only 0.3 deaths a third of a death. So it really takes about 3,000 women to present getting mammograms every year to prevent a death from breast cancer in this age range. And so that's a lot of false positives, and most of those are okay because it's mostly just coming back for another better, you know, more focused mammogram or an ultrasound. But some of them lead to biopsies. The biopsies, as Dr. Weiss said, are less invasive now than they used to be, but there still are women who have scars from that and who are traumatized. But as a general internist, I also see the few women out of those false positives who are really emotionally distraught because of this. It can trigger a severe depression in some women. And so there are actually a small percentage, but of the 1,000 false positives, who have a really severe anxiety or depression reaction to this, which greatly affects their lives.
Well, let me pick up on something else that Marisa Weiss said, and this comes from this report, even saying that breast self-exams were not effective, and went so far as to saying that the doctors didn't really need to teach their patients to do that, and even raising questions about whether doctors need to do that. And it seems so counter what we've been told for so many years.
Absolutely. I mean, it's absolutely true that many, many breast cancers are brought to our attention because women feel a lump, tell their doctors, and we get a biopsy or a mammogram and find the cancer that way. And I think even those who don't think we should be teaching self-breast exam think it's really important for women to be aware of their breasts, and if they notice a change, a lump, a dimple, to bring it to their doctor's attention. I don't think anybody is arguing against that. The issue comes from the few high-quality studies, what we consider the gold standard of studies in medicine, the randomized controlled trial. There are two in where they've taught women self-breast exam and then kept re-educating them and reminding them about it. So randomized, half women got it, half women didn't. And in both of those studies, there was no reduction in breast cancer mortality over 12 to 16 years of follow-up. In fact, there was no trend. The trend, if anything, was for a few more breast cancer deaths, but not statistically, no real statistical difference, but no trend towards benefit. And a trend towards more biopsies, 50%, in fact, not a trend, a real finding of 50% more biopsies. The major caveat is both of these trials were done in countries that don't have health systems like ours. One was in China, one was in Russia. And so the only good study in a Western country was done in England. Similar numbers of women followed for a long time, but it wasn't a randomized trial. It was just comparing to the standard population, and they also saw absolutely no benefit. So the best evidence we have says this is like a pill that does nothing for you in terms of preventing death, but will cause you to have more biopsies. So
you
it has clear harms, no benefits, and that's why many organizations around the world recommend against teaching self-breast exam.
And I know, Marisa Weiss, you have something to say to that. We're taking a very short break, getting back to our conversation with Drs. Jeffrey Theis and Marisa Weiss about this task force report coming out, or came out earlier this week, having to do with mammograms and breast self-exam. We'll be right back.
Clear Mobile Internet supports WHYY. Clear's 4G WiMAX network covering Philadelphia is designed to allow users to stream TV, movies, or public radio all over town. Clear, now covering Philadelphia. Details at clear.com.
Fox Chase Cancer Center supports WHYY. Fox Chase surgeons recently performed the center's 1,000th Da Vinci robot-assisted cancer surgery. Minimally invasive surgery often leads to better outcomes. All Fox Chase surgeons are fellowship-trained. They undergo 1 to 3 years of additional training, focused specifically on the highly complex techniques of cancer surgery, and specialize in robot-assisted surgery for many different cancers. More at foxchase.org. Fox Chase, perfecting the science of compassionate cancer care.
You're listening to Radio Times on WHYY. It's 11:20. Ahead at noon on Here and Now, a look at a shooting spree at a military base a few years ago in which the Army missed a lot of red flags having nothing to do with religious extremism. This afternoon's forecast, showers, high reaching 62 degrees. Periods of rain overnight, low falling back to 53. Tomorrow starts off cloudy. We could see some sunshine later in the day. Friday's high 59. Saturday, mostly cloudy, high 58 degrees.
Supporting WHYY, the Morris Arboretum Holiday Garden Railway in Chestnut Hill, opening November 27th through January 3rd. Holiday lights and model trains on a quarter-mile track out in the winter garden. Morris Arboretum in Chestnut Hill. Details at morrisarboretum.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. The new recommendations of a government panel of doctors and scientists regarding the usefulness of mammograms and breast exams has ignited a debate among healthcare professionals, confusion among women, and we are talking about this, trying to make some sense of this with Marisa Weiss, breast cancer oncologist, founder of breastcancer.org, Jeffrey Theis, assistant professor of medicine at the University of California in San Francisco, and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Marisa Weiss, and you know, it's hard to do stats and data on the radio, and I know that that's important in terms of understanding healthcare procedures and certainly what this debate is about. But it seems that it's stats and data versus, you know, anecdotes and stories of Elizabeth Edwards, who, you know, did a self-breast exam and figured out that, you know, and went to her doctor and figured out that she has this, you know, pretty serious case of breast cancer. And I guess I'm back to that same question, which is, what's a woman to do when you hear from Jeffrey Theis and about the data and blah, blah, blah? I don't mean to sound dismissive that way, but also how personal medicine is. Marisa?
Well, first of all, we know that Elizabeth Edwards hadn't had a chance to get her mammogram for several years, and when by the time she found it in her breast, it was significant in size. But I do want people to understand that the numbers are not just objective facts. You know, they're interpreted, and that the fact is that when we, even though the gold standard in many ways is a randomized controlled trial, when it comes to mammography, you know, the women were invited to participate. And these studies tend to underestimate the benefit of screening, since women who are put on the screening arm who don't get mammograms, who refuse to get them, but who die of breast cancer, they're still counted as deaths in that screening arm attributed to a failure of mammography. And similarly, women who are allocated to the unscreened control group arm, they can still get a mammogram. And even if that mammogram were to save their life, they're being counted as unscreened. And so if you actually look at a more accurate way to see what benefit can a mammogram do for women, you kind of have to look at the whole population mm-hmm. study. So if you go back over to Sweden and the Netherlands and you look at their reduction, the risk of dying of breast cancer by, let's say, 30 to 40%, and use those numbers to calculate how many people would have to get screened in order to save a life. So if you use the direct measurements of those numbers, instead of the 15% drop in risk of dying that the task force used, it would take 1,900 mammograms to save a life. If you use the 30% risk reduction in risk of dying of breast cancer, you'd have to screen only 850 women. And if you went with a 40% risk reduction and the reducing the risk of dying of breast cancer, then the number you would need to screen would be 703. And so task force says that in that group of women between 40 and 49, that we would be sacrificing some lives in order to save on the harms. And the fact is that, yes, false positives are upsetting and annoying, but an undetected breast cancer can kill you. And when you look at the digital mammography studies, almost all of the mammograms in the task force analysis were film mammography, which is sort of the old-fashioned mammography. And I can tell you, because I take care of women with breast cancer every day, and for over 20 years, and the advance with not just digital mammography but brand new film mammography machines is hugely different. And we have a study that says, in the New England Journal of Medicine, that digital mammography has a substantial benefit over film mammography in the women ages 40 to 49. And that's the very group of people that's being dumped by these, and neglected, I feel, by these guidelines. And then the other thing
You know, Marisa, hold on to that thought, only because I'm trying to sort of piece this together. It's complicated. The data is important, but I don't want to leave the audience or myself behind here. But just picking up on that point to you, Jeff Theis, which is the difference between a film mammography and digital mammography, and obviously technology, or hopefully technology, is getting better. Is this research based on old-style mammography?
Definitely. I mean, digital mammography is very new, and it's only about 10 to 15% of mammography facilities in the United States today that have digital technology. And as Dr. Weiss said, there's no question it is more sensitive, meaning it picks up more cancers that are there, digital mammography, in young women with breasts that are hard to read with mammography, those that have relatively dense tissue. And we're hopeful that that translates into better outcomes. We don't know that. Again, because it wasn't used. You know, one of the I want to step back and say a couple of things. One, a big issue that Dr. Weiss is concerned about, and I'm concerned about, is that women, that this will discourage women from getting mammography. And already, only 72% of women in the age group known to benefit the most, 50 to 69 year old women, only about 72% of those women have had a mammogram in the last 2 years. And so one of the real things, if we really want to change, you know, mortality rates in this country, what we need to do is reach out to those other 28% of women who aren't getting mammograms and make sure they're getting their mammograms on a regular basis. And we don't want to discourage women from getting regular mammograms. I'm sorry, I was going to...
Let me pick on something that Dr. Weiss said, basically saying yes, people can, women can be upset if they have false positives, but if you weigh that against the potential for finding cancer or even dying of cancer, that being upset is a small price to pay. What do you say in response to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated. I mean, that's a difficult and very emotionally resonant argument. We also know from some of the studies that she's talking about that there's a lot of overdiagnosis of breast cancer and overtreatment. She actually stated this in her earlier statements. In some estimates from the Scandinavian data, as many as one in three of the invasive breast cancers. So we do the biopsy, we take the lump out, we see it's invasive breast cancer, the kind we need to treat. Estimates from population studies in Norway and Sweden and Denmark are suggesting that as many as one in three of those would never cause symptoms in a woman, would never become clinically evident. But we're going to treat those with surgery, with radiation, and many of them will be treated with chemotherapy. And that's also a real harm. We've all seen, our female friends go through chemotherapy for breast cancer and know how taxing it is physically, emotionally, and spiritually for women and their families. So that's a real harm. That we can never tell which woman is being harmed and which woman is getting the benefit.
Well, and Marisa Weiss, as you were saying earlier, that mammography both under and over performs. But I think if I can read the kind of anxiety, anger, confusion about what this study says, is that women want some degree of certainty that these tests are going to perform. And I wonder whether that's something that you can say women can have from a mammogram?
Well, first of all, there's clearly no perfect test, and none of the three is perfect. But when you get the three, you know, mammography, and you perform breast self-exam on a regular basis, and you have a doctor who performs a good breast exam, that those three pieces of information are coordinated over time, so there's continuity of care. But let me just say what also deeply concerns me, and that is that if we were to follow these task force recommendations and throw this conversation back to the one that a woman has with her doctor, one-on-one, well, you know, the average time with a doctor is 7 minutes. And the task force recommendations assume that we have reliable prediction models that doctors can pull up in the examination room or where they're talking to a patient, when every single risk assessment model that we have has major flaws and hasn't been tested in a randomized controlled trial. And also, women don't really have a good, accurate sense of what their risks really are. And most of the survival benefit that we've seen have been in women without any known risk factors. So to sort of throw the whole thing back to the doctor and patient sitting together, I just think that's just an untested way to have this serious conversation about the most common cancer to affect women. And I also completely agree with Dr. Tice that we overtreat people. There's no question about that. But the fact is that look at the National Cancer Institute Consensus Panel on Non-Invasive Breast Cancer, September 2009. So all these fancy experts from around the world got together and said, look, we've got this non-invasive breast cancer. Most of the time, it's not going to kill a woman, take her life. Most of the time, it's not going to progress to an invasive cancer that would do that. But what tools do we have to figure out which ones won't and which ones will?
Mm-hmm.
And at the panel consensus paper at the end said we need to stick to the current recommendations because we're still not smart enough to figure out which ones will and which ones won't. So, you know, over-treatment is not, you know, what we do willingly. And, you know, if we knew better, we would do better. And, in fact, we do have more technologies emerging that help us make that choice. There's a test called, for example, Oncotype DX test. So women who present with a hormone receptor positive breast cancer, cancer that responds to hormones, estrogen, and grows in its presence. If you get an Oncotype DX test and it shows that you have a low risk of having a recurrence that in other parts of the body, you don't have to have chemotherapy. And that is now in full practice, and that was not in the modeling that was done for this task force recommendations. And so that's an example, you know, of medicine marching forward. Technology usually leads the leading edge, and you know, including digital mammography, tests like the Oncotype DX, which will help us make better decisions. But we can't just abandon everything that we've all the progress we've made and take this huge step backwards, particularly when it comes to the most common cancer to affect women, often in the prime of their lives. These women, ages 40 to 49. 50 to 60, both major cutbacks recommended, and then for over 74, pretty much a complete cutback. So I'm very worried because these are just like, you know, people can call them anecdotes, these people, stories that have come up, anecdotes. Well, the numbers, there's just the numbers and assumptions about numbers put into a computer model together with all kinds of other ingredients. So,
Let me just jump in here, and I do want to get to our callers, but I'm back to you, Jeff Tice, which is, yes, so you have these recommendations from this U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, and you've got the American Cancer Society, other organizations saying, essentially, we take issue with these recommendations. Then on top of that, you've got the head of HHS, Kathleen Sebelius, basically saying, talk to your doctor, you know, and we need more research. And she seemed to be also saying, I don't know if ignore is too strong a word, but it certainly felt that way. So again, you know, you just got women trying to figure out what's the right thing to do for them.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's very complicated. I'm glad we're having these conversations on the air to help educate women about how complicated it is.
Right.
I mean, certainly we're moving forward, and I'm a big believer in Oncotype DX. I think it's great. It's one of the examples where we're using technology to do less. And it's one of the times when clearly doing less is better for women. And, you know, in Europe, where these great numbers that Dr. Weiss was quoting, you know, they actually, in general, do mammography every 2 years, in some places every 3 years, and yet they're getting the same, if not better, mortality benefits than we are. So doing more is not always better. And, you know, all these recommendations we're doing is trying to look at the evidence and trying to figure out what's the most thoughtful way, best way we can maximize the benefits for women while minimizing the harms. And it's a you know, if it was easy, you wouldn't have all of this disagreement both within the United States and across different countries. And I think we're trying to be thoughtful about this. But I think the evidence from Europe, again, shows that every 2 years is probably fine.
Well, let me get Alan from Langhorne to join our conversation. And, Alan, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, I just have a question. It seems to me that if you gather 3,000 women together, which was the number given before you can save a life through mammography, and you asked them that, you know, you told them that one of them would die unless they all submitted themselves voluntarily to a test, how many of those women would then volunteer for that test? I can't imagine. If there's no physical detriment to having mammographies at the, you know, and mammograms in the age of the 40s, then it seems almost irresponsible to say that one life can be sacrificed because of a small life of anxiety that might be drawn from false positives.
Alan, I'm going to toss your question or your comment to Jeff Tice. Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay. So you would choose to have a mammogram, and that's probably the right decision for you, but that's not the decision necessarily for all women. Some women would weigh this differently and decide to delay mammography for some time. Part of it is concerns about, you know, the radiation dose cumulatively over 10 years, when only 14, well, I guess if we're talking 3,000 women, only about 42 of the 3,000 women would be diagnosed with breast cancer during that next 10 years, and they may elect to wait rather than starting mammography now.
And Marisa Weiss, are you saying that all women starting at the age of 40 should have a yearly mammogram?
Yes, I believe that the maximum benefit from mammographic screening is for women to be screened starting at age 40 annually. And let me just say that the value of these screening tests also depend on your population. And, you know, if you look at the value of mammography in China or Japan, where the risk in the population is lower, the value of the screening test might be lower. Whereas in this country, the risk is higher. And I'm particularly concerned. I work in the Philadelphia area, and a large percentage of my population is African-American women whose highest risk of breast cancer tends to occur in younger ages, who would be completely bypassed by this type of new set of recommendations. But when you actually look at population studies and look at women who are screened regularly over time, that's where you see the greatest benefit. And we have those data. So I feel like what's so frustrating about this situation for me is that not only do we have the randomized clinical trial data, but we have whole population studies and compliant, and you can see who's complying with the studies. And there is a reproducibly strong survival benefit for the cancer that's most common cancer to affect women, breast cancer. And so I can't tolerate, you know, any loss, any sacrifice of lives for these types of guidelines. And I think we should build on what we've already invested in. Mammography works. It can save your life. Absolutely, we can do a lot better with it, and those improvements are on their way. But your life is your greatest gift. Mammography is the biggest threat to a woman's life besides heart disease in some age groups. And I stand up for women's lives, and Breast Cancer Daughter has a strong position on this. Annual mammography after age 40.
And we're almost up at a break here. And live with the false positives and you know, what happens when there's a misdiagnosis. Live with that, Marisa?
Undetected breast cancer can kill you. But false positives, yes, they're upsetting, annoying, and uncomfortable, but undetected breast cancer can be deadly. And while mammography can provide you with full reassurance or security that you're okay, for sure that's true, no mammogram gives you no security.
And that's Dr. Marisa Weiss. She's a breast cancer oncologist here in the Philadelphia area, founder of breastcancer.org. Also with us is Dr. Jeffrey Tice. He's an assistant professor of medicine at the University of California at San Francisco, an internist. His research focuses on women's health and breast cancer risk assessment and prevention, getting two very different opinions and reactions to a recommendation from a government panel of doctors and scientists earlier this week having to do with mammograms and breast exams. 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Act 2 Playhouse and Amblers supports WHYY and presents On Golden Pond. Veteran Philly actors Tom McCarthy, Carla Belver, and Megan Belwar bring the multi-generational Thayer family to life in this comedy drama. Directed by Bud Martin, On Golden Pond is on stage now through December 13th. Tickets and information available at www.act2.org. That's ACT2.org.
It's 11:40. You're listening to Radio Times on WHYY. Radical lawyer William Kunstler's daughters have made a film that attempts to sort out misconceptions about their father. This afternoon at 1 on Tell Me More, Sarah and Emily Kunstler talk about their new movie called Disturbing the Universe. This afternoon's forecast, periods of rain, high reaching 62 degrees. Showers overnight, low falling back to 53. Tomorrow, cloudy to start. We could see some sunshine later in the day. Friday's high, 59.
Generosity.org supports WHYY. Generosity.org is a new local nonprofit looking for individuals to complete a 5-minute online survey that will help shape a new approach to philanthropy for Greater Philadelphia. The Take 5, Give 5 survey is a preview of how Generosity.org intends to help the region's nonprofit community do things differently. The Take 5, Give 5 survey is online at generosity.org. Generosity.org, Inspiration's hometown.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane, and we're talking about this task force report that came out earlier this year about prevention and primary care, mammography, breast cancer screening. The task force recommend that most women wait until they're 50 before they have a mammogram, then have them every other year. They also question the usefulness of breast self-exam, also question whether women over 75 should get mammograms at all. Their analysis was these current practices lead to too many false positives, too many tests, necessary procedures. The American Cancer Society, other organizations, including breastcancer.org, have spoken out against the task force recommendations, and we're hearing two perspectives from Dr. Jeffrey Tice and Dr. Marisa Weiss, and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get to Maggie from Chestnut Hill to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Maggie. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi, I was diagnosed with breast cancer when I was on my 44th birthday, and I had had a mammogram 3 months before, showed up negative, and then I did a self-examination because I was aware of, you know, I try and be as aware of my body as possible, and I found a lump. It turned out to be 16 tumors in my one breast that the mammogram didn't pick up. And I ended up getting a bilateral mastectomy. But I still strongly believe in mammograms because they make women aware and, you know, aware that, yes, you can get breast cancer. And I have no family history of breast cancer. I was living in California. I was eating organic food. I was exercising. I was, quote-unquote, the epitome of health.
Well, Maggie, how long ago was this? I'm curious.
This was a year and a half ago. I moved from Los Angeles when I was diagnosed to get treatment here and be closer to my family.
Well, you raised several questions. Let me put the first one to Dr. Jeffrey Tice, which is at least in the case of Maggie, and this is obviously anecdotal, but through her own self-exam, she was able to feel a lump, and lo and behold, she had breast cancer.
Right. Well, I mean, it points out several issues. I mean, mammography is imperfect, but it's the best tool we have. And we don't want women to stop having mammograms. I think we all agree on that. It's the best tool we have right now, and we want regular mammography for appropriate women, recognizing that there are false negatives, as in this case, where it doesn't pick up breast cancers, and there are false positives and overdiagnosis. Many women find lumps and bring them to their doctor's attention, and it's essential that women get that message to pay attention to their own breasts. The issue about self-breast exam, again, is whether being taught to do self-breast exam and doing it regularly on a monthly basis really improves on what would happen just naturally with a woman noticing something in her breast and bringing it to her physician's attention. And I think the data suggests that there's no added benefit to teaching women to do regular breast exams, and that what we really need to do is encourage women not to be shy about bringing something to our attention as soon as they notice it.
Well, Marisa Weiss, what are your thoughts in relation to that?
Well, here's the thing. You know, there's no one test that we use. We need to depend on what we have, and what we have is a pretty convenient test. You can examine yourself. It's no cost. You don't have to make an appointment with yourself. You do that. You get your mammogram starting annually at age 40, and you have your doctor's evaluation, and you correlate all of them. In general, about 20% of breast cancers are found by physical exam alone, about 40% are found by mammography alone, and the rest are found by both. And if you're a young woman, more of them are going to be found by physical exam alone. And and not only that, but the younger woman is going to have them, the growth rate of the cancer tends to be higher. So you do need to be employing each of those three to take advantage of whatever test might give you the advantage of finding it earlier. there's another point to make that hasn't really come out yet, which is that finding it earlier gives you more options and may allow you to avoid more aggressive treatment. So if you find a breast cancer earlier, you have a better chance of saving your breast, of not requiring mastectomy. If you find it earlier and the biology of the disease is earlier in its progression, you have you can more likely avoid chemotherapy. And so there is a concern, a deep concern, that this huge dropback in mammography recommendations will mean more women will have to have mastectomies and more women will require chemotherapy, and any money saved up front will be spent on the other side, as well as lives lost on the other side. And when we do talk about breast self-exam, the analysis from China, for example, that used survivorship as an endpoint didn't show a survivorship benefit. And there's some criticisms of that study. It's a lower-risk population than we have here in the United States. But the reality is that a lot of women find their breast cancers by physical exam alone who are maybe even under the age of 40, not yet even in the screening criteria. I think where I'm sure Dr. Tyson and I agree is that for anyone listening who may be at high risk for breast cancer, for example, you have a strong family history or on your mother or your father's side, or you have a known breast cancer gene in the family, or you were exposed to a significant amount of radiation while you were a young woman during the breast development years, let's say you had Hodgkin's disease, you were treated that way, or fluoroscopy or something or other, then you are at extra risk and you deserve extra attention, including more surveillance, more regularly than once a year, like every 6 months, perhaps, depending on your risk. It may also involve an MRI. It should involve a digital mammography instead of film. And you may even take extra steps, like your caller took, in a prophylactic way if you want to get aggressive about your care. But that conversation about for women at high risk needs to take place with a patient and her doctor who has expertise in managing people who are at high risk.
Maggie, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. I'm picking up on that and going back to you, Jeff Tice, because I know you do research on risk assessment and prevention, just so that women know if they are in this high-risk category. And Marisa Weiss mentioned some of those criteria. Also, dense breasts can also be a predictor. I wonder if you could talk about that.
Yeah, this requires a mammogram. So we're talking about breasts that absorb a lot of X-rays, and so much of the breast on the mammogram appears white, dense. And that makes it, first of all, it makes it harder to detect a breast cancer, and that's one of the areas where digital mammography is particularly good at looking at gradations of density and helping radiologists to find cancers within that dense tissue.
This is a statewide required monthly test of the emergency alert system originating from the Pennsylvania Emergency Management Agency. This is only a test.
Breasts.
Well, the only way is by mammography. Most radiologists reading mammograms actually report a four-category measure of density on their official report. It's usually not told to women, but it's heterogeneously dense, extremely dense, or mostly fatty, or scattered fibroglandular densities. Those are the different categories, and if it's a mostly fatty breast, that's a low-risk breast. If it's heterogeneously dense or extremely dense, that's a higher risk pattern for future breast cancer.
And Marisa Weiss, even looking ahead and using this controversy as a kind of a launching pad, what kind of research should be done in order to address some of the confusion and concerns that have come out of the study and the reaction to it?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, there's clearly an opportunity for research to advance what we know today. And that's one reason why I find the task force recommendations so upsetting, is because they're using pretty much old technology, old film-based machines, which give a foggier picture than we have today, a much clearer picture. So they're using old-fashioned mammography to predict the benefit of mammography in the future. And technology can really lead the way there. So there's a lot of opportunity for research. There is incredible things going on in terms of now that things are going digital to correlate between what you see on the mammogram, what comes out by biopsy, making sure that the doctor who ordered the biopsy knows what the result is, making sure that the radiologist who called something a problem know what happened when the biopsy was done. So there is a learning curve. And so that continuity of care, the communication between disciplines, is a great opportunity for research, as well as research into helping us pick which patients can be spared treatment and which patients require the most aggressive treatment, so that we can have our best chance and lead the world on eradicating breast cancer and helping to protect each woman's life against this devastating disease, which remains the most common cancer to affect women also in the prime of their lives.
Let me get to Dan from Winmore to join our conversation. Hi, Dan. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. First, a couple of quick points and then a question. The point is, when Dr. Weiss said that mammography, women who do best have mammograms every year, that does not inform the question of how they would do if they were done every 2 years. That has to be done head-to-head before you can say that. To say dollars saved up front would be spent later in treatment, where's the evidence? You know, that is either speculation or you have to model it. Third, I think when you talk relative amounts, 1 out of 10 women in an age group will die of breast cancer, you have to give the absolute amounts. How many people die in that age group? The death rate may be very low in the 35 age group. The question is, what are newer techniques? Not even looking at mammography. I mean, they mentioned Oncotype DX. That's after the fact. That's once you have breast cancer. Are there blood markers coming up that will help detect it? Are there local small coil MRIs? What else other than MRI is coming along?
Well, we touched on some of this new technology, but Marisa Weiss, you want to respond to Dan's call?
Well, first of all, we have a lot of data about interval cancers and cancers that show up in between mammogram visits, and we also have a lot of data on women who actually get their mammogram each year and those who don't. And the ones who get their mammogram each year are discovered at earlier times in the diagnosis and have a better survivorship. So this is the thing. There's a lot of data out there that argue strongly, I believe, for annual mammography. And there's no question that we need to put new techniques up against what is now the standard of care, which is mammography. Amen. I'm all for it. I would love to get the perfect test. So much is at stake.
And to you, Jeffrey Tyson, and this is maybe more a political question, but one of the theories, rumors, you know, related or reacting to this particular task force report is that it gives the insurance companies a reason, you know, not to underwrite women's mammograms between the ages of 40 and 49. Now, Kathleen Sebelius, HHS, said that's not going to happen. But nonetheless, while we're debating health care reform and legislation, you throw this in. Everything is political these days. And it just adds, I think, to the kind of anxiety that people have about our changing health care system anyway.
Well, I think, you know, Secretary Sebelius' comment is just points out that it's politically untenable for any organization to cut back on covering mammography. I don't think any, you know, there would be such negative publicity if any insurance company stopped covering mammograms every year or stopped covering mammograms for women in their 40s that no one would dare do it. So I don't think that will be an issue. I think the issue is, you know, continuing to move our evidence base forward. I mean, as Dr. Weiss was saying, many of us are working very, very hard at trying to develop new blood tests. People are moving beyond genomics to proteomics to try and find small markers in the blood. Nothing's been successful yet, but there's active work at the University of California. We're actually trying to band together our five cancer centers and coordinate the way we gather information from mammograms to recommendations for further imaging to biopsies to the way we process all the specimens, gather, you know, specimens from as many women as possible and try and leverage information across all of our five UC cancer centers to try and advance the state of the science. And hopefully we will do that so that we can have better data on which to refine our recommendations.
And I wonder to you, Marisa Weiss, and we have about a minute before we have to say goodbye here, but, you know, I can hear from the two of you that the doctors have very different reactions to this report. And are there efforts to try to find some consensus among practitioners such as yourself?
Well, I think that people are trying to really go to the facts and let the facts guide us. And I have to say, I'm not really reassured by the political fallout that the insurance companies would get if they stopped covering it. I'm concerned about the confusion that the women are having out there that will keep them from coming in. We've seen a lot of cancellations at the hospital today, even. And here's the thing. Since mammography was introduced in this country, that the risk of dying of breast cancer nationally was dropped by about 30%, most of those deaths, the extra survivors were attributed to mammography. I mean, mammography saves lives, and it is a big reason why in this country we're finally getting a drop in the risk of dying of breast cancer. So I believe we improve what we have, but continue to utilize it so that we can give the benefit to the women who are protecting their lives, trying to.
Dr. Marisa Weiss, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times. And Dr. Jeffrey Theis, thank you for joining us as well.
My pleasure.
And Dr. Marisa Weiss is a breast cancer oncologist, founder of breastcancer.org. Jeffrey Theis, assistant professor of medicine at the University of California at San Francisco. Appreciate your phone calls to Radio Times. You can also check us out. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. Al Banks, our engineer. Susan Greenbaum is the senior producer of Radio Times. Patty Leswing, Dennis Devine produced the program. I'm Artie Moscowane, and you're listening to WHYY-FM Philadelphia and WHYY.org, member-supported public media.